Recorded for the Dersingham Millennium History Project on the 10th of October 1998. Can I have your full name, please?
Alan Walker.
And you're always just known as Alan. You don't have a nickname. When did you first come to Dersingham?
1st of April 1939, the date of my birth.
So you were born here and you've lived here ever since?
Yeah.
Right. Do any other members of your family live in the village?
Cousin, in-laws.
So you're basically an old Dersingham family. Now, because you were born here, you must be able to remember an awful lot about when you were a little lad. So I want you to go right back to the past and tell me what you can remember.
Some while ago. I think my earliest recollection is starting school. And I can't remember very little prior to starting school, but I remember having to walk to the primary school, which is now the youth centre, twice a day because we used to have to come home for dinner.
Oh, so they didn't have any school dinners?
No school dinners, nothing.
And you couldn't take a packed lunch?
You could do, I presume, but I never did. I was used to come home.
Right. And where did you live?
Pants Drive, next door to the coal yard.
And what was your dad doing?
At that time my father was working for James Jackson, the farm at High House Farm.
Right. So you were from a farming background?
Yes.
So you used to walk twice a day to school?
Yes.
And what can you remember about school?
I remember walking with Mr. Mason Jones, who was the headmaster, because he lived this side of the village as well. And us youngsters, we used to have to run to keep up with him. We couldn't keep up with him walking. And the other teachers was Miss Hudson, Miss Robinson, Mr. Boyce. But they were the only ones when we first started, and there was various others came as we went through the school.
What did you use to sort of lesson mainly did you do?
3 hours, read, write and arithmetic. When we first started.
Were you any good?
Well, yes, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, yes. I took the 11 plus at the Dersingham primary school. I failed it the first time, but I took it again at the secondary school, and I was the only one to pass at the grammar school.
The only one?
That year, yes.
Now, how did you used to get in? What was it, bus or train?
To the grammar school?
Yes.
By bus.
Right. Because I know they used to use the train.
But some didn't, but I always used the bus.
I suppose it would be nearer for you.
Going on from there, the grammar school meant quite a bit to me because my grandfather was the first caretaker of King Edward VII Grammar School, and I hold his gold watch which the boys presented to him for his first 25 years service.
Good gracious, yes. That was, of course, those were, I mean, what was the grammar school like then? You had caps?
Well, if you got to the grammar school you had to wear the uniform and, you know, that was an honour to get there, really.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I didn't do as well as a lot of people. I found it hard work, I think, mainly because I was an outdoor boy with my father. By that time, he'd got his own business. And through the summertime, I was always out with him, so the homework used to go by the board. Wintertime, I used to do better because I couldn't get outside.
So you liked gardening and all those sort of things, did you?
I liked the outdoor life, full stop.
Yes. Can you remember the kind of games you used to play when you were a little lad?
Cricket, football and hockey. Hockey more when I got to the grammar school. I always used to support the local teams of football and cricket. I scored for the cricket team for several seasons and just used to support the football team. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to play much because I had very weak legs in those days.
Oh dear.
I couldn't stick it.
And did you used to play around the village in the evenings?
Yes, what's now the playing field. We always used to call it the cricket field, which was nothing like it is today. I remember it was long grass and gorse bushes, which when my father worked for James Jackson, he used to mow by hand twice a year.
And that was it?
And that was it.
Mowed it by hand?
Yeah.
And it presumably didn't have swings and things then?
No. There was just the iron bars, which are still near the station now again. That was all there was.
So it was just a great big space.
Yeah. As I said, far end, the Bank Road end, was nearly all gorse bushes. It was just a path through it.
Right. And did you used to go down beach at all to play?
Well, I would say it used to go down the beach, yes, but I never was one for going down and sort of playing. I mean, couldn't swim, so they used to go down and swim in the shingle pits when I first remember, but not being a swimmer, that didn't interest me.
So basically, most of your life was football and cricket?
Yeah, sports, yes.
Now, when that field was, as you say, in that condition, that was when that corner shop was there, the one that is now the fish and chip shop.
And that was Linford's Corner.
Yes, what can you remember about that?
The thing that sticks in my mind about Linford's Corner is, presumably it was a circus came to the village and an elephant being fed by Mr. Linford at the doorway.
An elephant?
An elephant. Yes.
Now, Mr. Linford was the owner of the corner shop. Yeah.
Also in that corner shop was where the doctor's surgery was in those days.
Really? Before the Bank Road one?
Yes, that's moved from there to Bank Road. And that didn't go into the little surgery, that went into Mrs. Chisholm's bungalow first. And then into the surgery.
Because when I spoke to Dr. Fielding about it, because he can remember having his surgery there, yeah. It was a tiny little place, wasn't it? Oh, so they used to go to Linford's Corner shop?
Sure they did.
And what did he sell?
Groceries.
So it was a grocery
shop? General grocery store. You had a bag of sugar and he used to fill the blue bags up with his scoop. He had a big bag of sugar and you used to take your ration books to get your bananas.
And of course, butter wasn't... Did he cut butter up?
Yeah, that's right. And the cheese, didn't they? Used to have a wire on to cut the cheese in. I can't honestly remember about the butter, but I remember the cheese.
Yeah, and biscuits in boxes.
Yeah.
And you weighed them out.
Right, that's right.
And that was there a long while until it became the co-op.
Yeah. Yes. Co-op took over. Mr. Dent came as manager of the co-op.
Right. Now, while that shop was up and running, what about Thaxter's and the other shop?
Thaxter's and...
Rankin's.
Thaxter's wasn't there when I first remember. Rankin's was, but that was then Mrs. Wire's. Mrs. Wire, that was a general store, I suppose you'd call it. Can't much remember. I remember it being there.
Yeah.
And I've been told previous to that, that was called the Cyclist Rest, because it used to be a little restaurant.
For people biking.
Yeah.
Only in an early photograph that we have, it shows you the corner shop and it shows you the two shops. So eventually, Mr. Thaxter must have had...
Mr. Thaxter started the opposite side of the road, with three or four greenhouses behind his bungalow. And he used to sell his produce off of a barrow at the bottom of his drive. His mother and father-in-law lived in the bungalow opposite,
yes.
Which eventually became
the shop.
He right. took over one of their rooms to start with and gradually got bigger and bigger and bigger.
And was it not very competitive with Mr. Rankin's shop?
Well, weekends... Notice is what came out from both shops was very amusing. You would start off in the morning at one price and by the end of the day their prices would be completely different, competing against each other.
I can remember them saying, compare our prices.
That's right.
And that what they meant was, compare with the next shop.
Yeah.
So it must have been quite amusing.
That was.
Because there were no other shops then in the village apart from those, were there?
There was partners around the other side of the village, wasn't there? This side. Partners was another provision shop.
Yeah.
The was Mrs. Terrington, where the frame shop now is.
And what did she sell?
I think that was another little general store.
Right.
And there was Mr. Whisker on the corner of Manor Road.
Right. Is that where the butcher's shop was?
No, the butcher's shop was on the corner of Heath Road, where right. Mr. Lincoln's undertaker's place now is.
Right.
Mr. Whiskers was opposite Nancy Cable's, where they had an antique shop.
Yes,
that
yes.
That was another little grocery shop.
So those little shops were to serve the population that lived that side of the village.
Yeah.
Right, and then of course there was the bakers.
Yes, bakers. And there was Fitz the bakers this side.
So villagers bought their groceries in the village.
Yeah.
We had no supermarkets and things like that.
No.
Right. Now, did you, when you were young, belong to any organisations or clubs?
The only organisation, youth organisation I joined was the Cubs, and never did really get into that. I think the only reason I joined was because my cousin Rosie Bird was the leader. I can't remember how long I was in with him.
Right.
Right from an early age I went to Sunday school at church. From Sunday school I progressed into the choir. And while I was in the choir I got so I carried the cross. I also learnt to ring the bells.
Really?
So, oh. And I'd done that. I was involved with the church then until my father died when I was 17, 18. And then, as I said, by then my father had got the business, and when he died I had a full-time job running the business, so I didn't carry on with that until my daughter, she came along, and when she got about 7 or 8 she got involved with the church and she wanted to learn to ring the bell, so I went back bell ringing then.
Right. Now, there used to be also a chapel. The Methodist chapel also had Sunday school, didn't it? It seems that in those days, all the children went to Sunday school.
You either went to one of the chapels or the church.
There was no question of not going.
Well, I would say everybody went, but I should say 75% of the children went.
Was it just that this was the traditional thing to do?
I think it was, yes. That was the done thing.
Yes. And at Sunday school, what sort of things did you used to do?
They used to have lessons on the stories of the Bible, and draw pictures to correspond with those stories.
And I suppose it was more or less the same at the other Sunday school.
Yeah.
Yes.
There were two chapels.
Right, now tell me something about this bell ringing. I mean, have there always been bell ringers in the village?
I can't ever remember a time when the bells haven't been rung.
Right.
Sometimes they've been rung more often than others, but I think you can honestly say that there's always been a band of bell ringers there.
And how many people would be in the band when you were a bell ringer?
Well, there's 6 bells, so you have to have 6 to ring them all. We used to have about 8 people each Sunday to come on. And when I was Mr. Everson, who used to be a jeweller in Snatchley, he was the person who taught me to ring. And then when he passed on, Alec Nurse took over. And the second time I went back with my daughter, there was Alec Nurse, Jack Bunn, myself, and we had 4 or 5 youngsters who we taught to ring, and we had a nice little band.
Yes. Is it just a question of following a sheet of music and pulling?
That was what we done, and we used to get on very well with it. But there are what they call change ringing, which I never did do, because to do that, I found that take up a lot more time. I was quite happy to do with our 20 changes which we had on the board.
Yes.
And when I eventually finished, it was because we had other people come into the team who wanted to be more professional, if you like, and I just didn't want to know.
No. I mean, is it a question of counting beats?
I think when you get into change ring, and it is.
Yes. it was a bit more complicated. Yeah. Right. So you did your Sunday school and you used to play your cricket and football until you had to take over the business.
That's right.
Now, what was your dad's business?
Market Garden. That's the main. We used to have 2 acres Market Garden where we are now. We had the garden at the Red Pumps, the garden at the Feathers, which is now the Feathers car park, and then we had 8 acres of land at Fern Hill, which we used to grow strawberries, potatoes, corn, and sugar beet on.
So in fact, it was very well spread out. Yeah. So he spent all his time going from one to another. So it was mainly your dad and yourself.
Yes.
And how many other people?
We employed one more full-time, one or two part-time when the case arose.
Yeah, particularly at casual times, that's I suppose.
Right. Strawberry picking, potato picking, and that sort of thing.
So some of the lads, I would imagine, yeah. Would they?
No, we had 2 ladies, actually, mostly. Because you had, you know, that was the end, well, not end of the war, but there was ladies in the village who'd worked on the land during the war, who were still quite prepared to...
To do the work.
To do the work.
Right. Now, tell me something about what the job entailed, and then how the job gradually changed over the years.
Well, as well as the market garden here, we used to do floral work, e.g. wreaths, bouquets and that sort of thing, which I learned off of my mother, partially, and the rest of the learning I had regarding the florist work I learned from helping the local undertaker and seeing wreaths from other florists.
Right. So you actually became quite good at doing flower arranging yourself?
Yes.
And what other things did you do?
Wedding bouquets, pedestals in the church, well, anything we get within florists, with florists really, all self-taught.
Yeah, and then presumably vegetables.
Yeah, we used to grow a lot of early vegetables because the garden was situated where they got all sun all day, and we used to be able to produce early vegetables. And surplus stuff, what we didn't sow here, was taken to Wisbech Market.
Really?
Yes.
Now, did you used to have a van take it all over?
Car and trailer.
And you helped your dad until you say he died?
My dad died when I was 19.
That must have been very young.
He'd just been elected onto the parish council. He attended his first meeting and dropped down dead on his way home. So don't ever ask me to join the parish council.
Sure not. But that was a hell of a responsibility for a young man.
Yeah.
So, were you frightened at first of taking it all on?
Not really, no. Because I left the grammar school before I should have done, because as I said earlier, I didn't do as well at the grammar school as I ought to have done. So.
Well, you were obviously cut out for a life on the land.
So I'd had 3 years with my father and just carried on.
Now,
that was my mother's livelihood. And
yes.
That's what I had to do.
Right, so you kept the family?
Yeah, well, my mother, she done it.
Yes, until you got married and then you had to keep your own family.
That's
as well.
Right, we had the big house. When I got married, we moved in with my mother, so we were on the spot all the time. My wife then started to help by driving. She didn't do much manual work, but she was able to do driving, delivering and that sort of work for me. So.
Now, these other sites that you mentioned,
yeah.
Did you gradually sell them or what?
No, we only rented them off of the people. That was Mrs. Isherwood at the Red Pumps. And that's when Mr. Isherwood, or I think Mr. Isherwood died, so that had to go. And then the Feathers developed their car park, so that had to go. Because the garden was virtually half of the Feathers car park what is today.
Really? So you kept losing pieces of land. Did you get any others in their place?
Well, I got some extra land up Fern Hill. When I finished, I think we had about 14 acres up there where we started with 8.
Really? Up Fern Hill? Well, up sort of at the top, near Four Winds?
before you get to Four Winds, if you go up the first part of the hill, there's a gateway straight in front when you're on the corner.
Right.
Go straight up there.
Ah, right.
There used to be ourselves, Mr. Bird, Mr. Balding, Mr. Richards, and Mr. Reynolds, all had
plots.
I think in total there was about 26 acres. That belongs to Sandringham Estate, but it was for Dursingham village people to have if they wanted.
Right. Now you must have seen an awful lot of changes in farming methods over the years.
Oh, definitely.
Would you like to tell us something about that?
When I first remember my father, we had a horse, so a lot of the work was done by horse. We had an iron-wheeled tractor, which if you took it onto the road, you had to put flat bandages, we used to call them, on the back wheels so the spokes didn't go into the roads. And then we...
And you had just the one horse?
One horse.
Yes.
And one tractor, which the tractor was used to do the main ploughing and cultivating at the beginning of the year, and the horse used to do the rest with the harrows and the rolls. And
worth gold they weren't they, those old horses?
Yeah. And then we sold the horse and bought a little Ferguson tractor.
Was it as good as the horse?
The Ferguson system of farming was very, very good. And, if you had the Ferguson implements to go with the Ferguson tractor, you would do the job.
Was that what they used to call Massey Ferguson?
No, that was Ferguson.
Oh, that was the first Ferguson. And what sort of year are you talking around there then? 1930s?
No, I'm not always there. My father bought the Ferguson tractor in about 1951.
Oh, of course, after, yes, yes.
It's 1948, the actual year of its manufacture.
Yeah.
And we sold it last year. I had it from that time to.
And it served you all good. That while. Good gracious.
Michael Irwin bought it and he's renovated it.
So it's still being used.
Well, I would say it's still being used. That's renovated to its original glory, if you like.
Right. And have the crops changed, the kind of things you used to sell? Or is it still very much the same?
No, I think it's very much the same. A market garden is a market garden,
yes.
Really.
But were any kind of crops more popular then than they are now?
No, I don't think so. The only thing we found was, from the marketing point of view, they've got so many more rules and regulations come in regarding the way they had things had to be marketed, that the amount we used to do, that wasn't a viable proposition at the end. That was why I gave the job up.
Would you say this is fairly common?
Oh, definitely.
That little market gardens like yourself have gradually been driven out of business because of all the paperwork?
Paperwork and rules and regulations. Because we used to just be able to go and cut cauliflowers, put them in a box and take them to market. There was no grading or nothing. There was big ones and little ones. And you had lettuces you used to just cut and put in a cardboard box. Now they all have to be put in polythene bags and all that sort of thing.
Can you see any reasoning behind all this paperwork and rules? Or do you think it's just a waste of time?
It's finding somebody a good job.
But that can't be the only reason.
No, that is... I can't really. No, I don't think I can.
And would you say most market gardeners feel the same as yourself? That really...
I think in the size of the establishment we had, yes. It was driven out through the bureaucracy, if you like.
Right. So when did you actually finally sell up?
I finally gave up market gardening in 1976.
Right.
November 1976.
And did someone step in your shoes in the village?
No.
So by then people were beginning to go shopping further afield.
Oh, yeah, supermarkets and that sort of thing.
And so what have you done from then onwards?
I've worked for the Construction Industry Training Board at Birch & Newton.
Right. What, still farming kind of work?
Well, when I started there, it was ground maintenance, which was maintaining the sports fields, gardens, etc., etc. But like everything else, times have changed, and we now have to do anything we're asked to do, really. We have to support the training side of the business. We still do the football fields and gardens. What gardens there are left, a lot of them have been done away with. And I've said many times, general work that covers a multitude of sins.
Yes, of course, yes. Now, what was the most important day that you've ever spent in the village?
Well, I've thought a lot about this, and there's nothing really sticks in my mind where I can say, you know, that was the most important day of my life in Dursley.
Right.
There's been so much happened, but nothing
particularly. Well, can you think of any things that perhaps are fairly important? Not really?
Not really, no.
Right, so your life has been just a nice contented...
Yeah.
Right, well, try this then. What was the worst time you can remember?
The night of the floods, 1953.
Now, it's interesting how many people say that that was the worst night. In what way was it worst from your point of view?
Well, my uncle had a dairy herd down in the marshes, and him, my father, and one or two other men of the village went down to get the cows out, and obviously, knowing what was happening, that concerned me a lot.
Yes,
and
because
so
that was
that's
your
why,
family.
Yeah, that's what always sticks in my mind.
Now, you would have been a young lad then.
Yeah. 14.
You're probably very frightened.
Well, in those days, we lived down Pansy Drive, as I said earlier. But we had already taken over the market garden up there at Hillside.
Right.
And we kept the tractor and everything down Pansy Drive. And when Father got back from the marshes, he said, "We're moving everything up the hillside and we're moving all the furniture upstairs," because he didn't think the water was going to stop the rain. And that's what we done.
This was while the storm was still going on.
That was sort of during the evening.
In fact, it stopped at the railway, didn't it? Is it because the land rises slightly?
That does rise, yeah, yes. It's when you look at it, you don't think of it till you look at it, but there is quite a bank at the railway.
Yes.
But having said that, the bottom, which is now Valley Rise, did get flooded through there.
Yes, but
because there's a drain underneath the railway.
Yes,
which...
yes. And of course, the current houses that are being built on the Souter land adjoining the bypass. That is sea level, isn't it?
Yeah, I imagine it is.
So that wouldn't be very useful if the same thing happened again.
No. Very frightening.
What do you think was the cause of that?
Of the floods?
Yes.
Well, obviously it was the high tides being held up by the northerly winds. The tides were not able to go out, they were all coming in over a period of days. The water level just got higher and higher.
Did you lose any cattle?
No, well, we didn't. I don't think my uncle did. There was one cow which was unaccounted for on the Sunday morning. And when they eventually got down to the dairy, I think it was either the Tuesday or the Wednesday of the following week, that was still in the cow shed. With the salt water right around its neck.
So it was very lucky,
yeah, it was,
that it hadn't drowned.
That night of the floods, all the cows, they opened all the gates when they were down there, and all the cows came up to the railway line, and they eventually got them rounded up, they brought them onto the fields, which is now Hawthorne Drive.
Right.
That's where they spent the first night, and then they went to the field barn behind the Dursingham Mill.
Because the ground must have been completely salted.
Well, they was up there 2 months, I think, by the time they got the dairy all sorted out.
Yes.
Got back to work and all that.
And of course people were killed, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, there was... I didn't actually see any bodies myself, but there was bodies of animals and all laid along the waterline.
So that was the worst time.
Yeah.
Now, having been born in the village, you'll be able to answer this. What do you think are the biggest changes you've seen in the village?
All the houses which have been built.
Can you remember in what order they were built?
Well, St. Gellan Manor was the first
Yes. Was there a manor there originally?
Not in my time, but I understand there was a manor there.
Yes. And they were built by the council?
Yeah.
As council housing for the villagers?
Yeah. And Park Hill, that would be another one just after the war. When I first remember, the only buildings at Park Hill was the line of bungalows along the roadside.
Yes.
None of the back ones were.
Right.
That was all brambles, and they used to go up their blackberry in the summertime.
And of course, it, for many years, it didn't have a proper road, did it?
No, no.
On the other hand, the bungalows at the top have the most wonderful view.
They have.
I've been up there and looked, and you get those wonderful sunsets.
Well, across to the Wash.
Across the Wash. Yeah. Right, so they came next.
I won't be positive on that, but I should imagine that.
Yeah.
And then I think after that, you got down to West Road, West Hall Road and...
Centre Vale
and Centre Crescent.
Right.
Because personally, I've ploughed most of that land down there for different people.
In what would have been the meadows? Or the... What was it called?
There was a meadow. I don't know what it was called then. Because where it was West Hall Road, all that area, you used to go into that beside the shoe shop. The bungalow, the right hand side of the shoe shop?
Yes.
That was the entrance on the land of West Hall.
So you have ploughed that one?
I ploughed on there, yes. There was pasture and arable land, not the arable bit I had ploughed.
Yeah, so presumably the owner of the land sold it for building?
Yeah, that was the Baldwin family.
Right.
And then when you get across to Queen Elizabeth Drive, that would be James Jackson's land. There was two James Jacksons, father and son, and the father, he lived in the house on the left-hand side as you go into Centre Vale, just past the entrance into Centre Crescent. And he owned the land what Centre Crescent was built on in the bottom of Centre Vale.
Right. So that was the next section.
Yeah.
Now, all this was long before Valley Rise, wasn't it?
Well, no, as far as I'm thinking, that and Valley Rise were very, because that was two different developers. And I think that and Valley Rise came into... There wasn't a lot, it wasn't far between them, I should
say. No. And then, of course, since then, it's just gone on and on, hasn't it?
Valley Rise, which I've meant to say earlier, my father used to farm part of that as well. A bit what is where Crest Road and Eden Close, that strip, all down there.
Really? Behind the farm?
No. Well, yeah. That was behind the cooler yard.
Yes, because we lived at number one Valley Rise when we first came here. And we had lots of coal in our soil.
Yeah.
And they said it used to be the coal yard.
Yeah, that's right.
But down the bottom of Valley Rise, it was all sand. So there wouldn't have been
that,
any...
That was virtually all sand.
So that wasn't
good. No good soil there, really.
No, no. So you were all right until about halfway down.
Down, yeah.
Right.
Lincoln's had the farm next door to it.
Yes.
Father, he had the farm there.
Yeah.
They had a strip down, Mr. Nurse had a strip down, and then Baldwin's had a strip down. That, those three strips, now is Valley Rise.
So Mr. Masson bought all of those strips of land from the various...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ah, right. So, I've talked about this with lots of people. We have now run out of land, haven't we, for the village?
Virtually, yes.
There is no more.
Yeah.
And that's why they're doing all these infills.
I hope they don't find any more.
I don't think there's much more to find.
No. Well, they can spread out at length.
But of course we're bounded by Sandringham, aren't we? So people like yourself are quite relieved that there's no more.
Yes. I think if we got much bigger we would no longer be a village. We're not really a village now.
No, no.
We still can accept it as it is, but if it got any bigger, I don't think I would like it.
Now, as you live near the Little Field, the one over here, Can you tell me something about that? That little field that used to be opposite the paint shop.
Well, all I can tell you about that, that originally when I first remember it, it had a big hawthorn tree virtually in the middle of it, which presumably that's where Hawthorn Cottage has got its name from.
And that's the row of cottages along the back, right?
And that got struck by lightning and that killed it. So that was eventually taken away.
And did it not have little horses on it at one time?
Not in my time. I can't remember the horse. Unless Mr. Tarr's ever had his little horses on it. In my time, all I can remember is when my uncle had it, he used to put cattle on it. And then Mr. Dorr had it and put sheep on it. And that is all I can ever remember.
And then eventually there was nothing on it and it just grew into a mess.
That's right.
Now, you said that the developers who bought it had strict regulations. What were they?
Well, the flats had to be situated so that the cottages could still be seen from the roadway.
Right.
And they had to be planned in such a way that they blended in with the cottages and also our own property here.
Yes. And you say, from your own point of view, it was a success.
Very much a success.
Yes.
I think if you'll ask the developers, the only people who didn't complain about the development was the people who that was going to affect most, the ones who lived around it.
Yes.
And they didn't have any criticism about it at all.
No.
Because, as you say, the field was in such a mess that it had got to be better, whatever they'd done to it.
Yes, it was a very tasteful little development. Yeah. I think people were afraid that they were going to stick great big tall flats that would screen the view of the cottages.
Yeah.
But in fact they didn't, so that was a good piece of building.
We were the only ones who lost the view, but we've still got a nice view as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. Now, you say that the biggest changes you've seen, apart from your own...
Is the development of the village.
Yes, yes. Is there anything that's been developed in the village that you think is bad?
No, I don't think there is. Can't.
So you think it's really been done quite well?
I think there's been quite a lot of thought put into it. In my younger days, we always thought of what is now the Gamekeeper's Lodge, and I saw, but even that has been brought back in there.
Yes, and an improvement made.
Yes, very good.
Do you think the fact that we're so tied up with Sandringham makes it much more difficult for builders to spoil it?
Very big possibility there. It mustn't upset the Queen too much.
Now, what would you like to see happen in the future?
As I've just said, that's what I would like to see, nothing happen in the way of any more development. I think we've got as big as we want to be. And as long as they leave it as it is today, I'll be quite happy.
Now, you are aware of the changes that they've been talking about for the millennium. What are your views about a big village hall?
Well, I haven't been caretaker of the church hall for 25 years. If anybody think they can make a big village hall pay in Durham, good luck to them.
That's right. Where, if there was going to be one, where would you site it?
Well, I think the only place we've got left is the development behind Budgeons.
Behind Budgeons?
Well, no.
You mean Mr. Souter's?
Yeah.
But then that's all already taken, isn't it? Suggestions have been made about the playing field. What about where you use...
No. That's for the children.
Yes. The allotments?
No. Because there are still people who want the allotments, and that is the last lot left in the village, so why should they be taken away?
And finally, the land behind the church hall that joins onto the cricket ground.
Well, that is an open piece of land, I would agree, but I don't think that's a suitable piece of land for...
Now, why would that be?
Well, that is very, very wet, for one thing. I know drainage can be done. But that is one green piece we've still got left in the village. And I'd like to see it left.
So you feel, as most people do, that we really have enough halls now?
Yes, I do. As I say, having been caretaker of the church hall and known how we struggled to keep that going, how are you going to keep anything bigger going?
Now, if there was some money available...
One thing I will say there, we was also, while we ran the church hall, we ran a sequence dance club for about 15, 20 years. And at no time during those 15 to 20 years, although that was advertised very well in the village, did we have more than a dozen people from the village taking part. If it wasn't for outsiders,
That
dance club would have folded along well before it did.
Yes. The word that's come across from other speakers is apathy. That people aren't interested in the village, that it's just somewhere to live. And you think this is because there's too many new houses?
Possibly.
Or has it always been like that?
Well, I think probably you're right, Mother, because going back to my right younger days, I can't remember as such, but I've been told that they had dances in the church hall where if you didn't get there early, you couldn't get in. When that was a smaller community.
Yes, but then there wasn't the television.
No, that's true.
And people didn't have cars.
No, they get a better lot better now.
So I think village things were used more then.
Going back to the old sequence dancing, I know there was people in the village who'd done sequence dancing, but they went to King's Lynn to do it. They didn't support us in the village.
Oh, right. Yes.
So they'd probably do the same however big a hall you had with them.
Yes. So if there was, say, somebody came along and gave the village some money for the millennium, what would you want to be done with, used it for?
Well, if you're going to talk about halls, the church hall, if they had some money, a good sum of money, you could make that a lot better place than what it is.
Yes.
And I would use it on that.
But you keep the main hall the same size, or would you extend it?
No, if that could be done, as I said, all the time we was caretaker, I would like to have seen a hall not between the big hall and the small hall.
Yes.
So you could have a seated area in the small hall.
Yes.
And to make it better, you could build on the back of it to make other rooms for smaller functions.
Could that be done? I mean, is that not sort of... It would be possible to remove the adjoining wall.
I should imagine so.
And then proper car parking.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, of course, that we're all talking about is the barn. Do you think the barn should be made use of as some kind of community?
Yes, because... That's still a very solid building, and I think that's a pity that can't be made more use of.
It's just a glory hole, isn't it?
Yeah, because going back again, I remember when I had a corn dryer in when we used to go to school. Mr. Stanton used to use it for drying his corn.
The old barn?
Yeah.
And yet it's so old, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was... used to be opened up and you'd see him working in there with the corn. Which was what it was years ago, and they used to take the corn to pay the church for the dues and demands.
Now, it seems a funny one, but presumably you will retire and be buried in the village.
I hope so.
Yes. You're not going off to anywhere else.
If nothing unforeseen happens, I start my days here and I'll finish them here.
Yes, yes. And what does the millennium mean to you?
Very little, really, only a change of a century.
As someone who used to go to church, does it not have any religious significance to you at all?
Not really.
So it's just another number?
Number, yeah.
Right. And is there anything you'd like, if you were alive in 100 years' time, is there anything you'd like to say to the people of the village in the future?
Hopefully I'll be able to say thank you for not spoiling it anymore.
Right. So you think it's a good village?
I do.
As someone who's lived here all your life?
I think we're very lucky with all the facilities we've got.
Yes.
You look around the village, there's or as you've seen when we've had the odd snow, belt of snow come along so you can't get out. We've got very, very few things which we can't get on our own doorstep.
Yes. We don't have a swimming pool. Do you think we need one?
I don't think so.
We've got the sea, haven't we?
We've got the sea. We've got swimming pools in easy reach anyhow.
Yes.
You've got Kingsley, you've got Hunstan, you've got Bertram Newton.
Yeah. Right, well thank you very much.